Welcome, dear listeners, to this week's Afternoon Satsang. As always, this is Prem from Team Radio Sai with Arvind from the studios of Radio Sai at Prashanthi Nilayam coming to you live. We're going to continue with what we started last week. This fortnight, we go through the Conversations with Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba book authored by Dr. John Hislop, one of Swami's devotees from United States. This is, if I'm not wrong, the sixth episode, and we are in the middle of, I think this probably is just the first interview or the first conversation that he has documented. And one of the interesting things that we'll be seeing in this particular episode, or what we'll be concluding the conversation which he has documented, is not only does it speak of the beautiful conversation that he's having with Swami, the very interesting and very profound interaction which is happening between Swami, Dr. Hislop, and a couple of other visitors were there in the room. And it's almost like a satsang where all of them are sharing their thoughts, as we saw last week. Apart from that, I think what's interesting about this part is it'll also give you a feel of what it is to be in the interview with Swami, the kind of interactions which happened, and the variety of topics which are discussed, because it's not only spiritual. A lot of people would have this misconception that when you're conversing with Swami or when you're spending a few minutes with Swami, either in the interview room or when Swami is in the bhajan hall with students or when Swami is on the portico, we have this feeling that Swami is all the time only speaking about spiritual matters and philosophical concepts. There's always a spiritual and philosophical undertone in whatever Swami says. That's something which we cannot deny. But Swami also has a beautiful way of bringing across the message through very mundane conversations, very simple interactions, and a taste of that is what we will see towards the end of this particular discussion. But before we come to that, there is a very beautiful part where Swami explains some of the fundamentals for a sadhaka, which is very useful for all of us. A few points we saw last week and the weeks before that. But before we come to that, let's most lovingly offer our humble pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet, and let's ask Arvind to join all of us. Sairam Arvind.
Sairam Prem, and once again it's such a beautiful privilege and pleasure to be having the satsang in the center of our universe, that is Prashanthi Nilayam. I think last week we were at that point where Swami was saying that the more intensity that one has towards reaching God or attaining God, the greater will be the result that is seen. And Swami gave the example of how if you are digging a well, the deeper you dig, the higher will be the wall formed by the mud that we bring out. So the depth of the well can be gauged from the height. And therefore, Swami uses an analogy to indicate that in the same manner, just as you are able to gauge the depth of a well from the height of the mound of mud beside it, so too can you gauge the depth of a person's spiritual progress from the intensity that one is showing towards God, or, you know, intensity of love, pure love that one has towards God. So that is the example Swami gives, and I think that is the point at which we concluded the last satsang. So we take it up and go ahead from there, because at that point in time, Dr. Hislop says that Swami says that he cannot give to a dry heart. Why is the heart dry? Now, in the sense that in the previous conversation that we had, I mean, this is the same conversation going on in the interview room, but when we talked about it in the satsang, Swami says that the heart mustn't be dry, and it should be saturated with love for God, and that love for God is what is intensity, and that intensity is a measure of one's spiritual progress and all that. So it almost is like when there is intensity only can there be any progress. So therefore, metaphorically, Hislop is asking, why is there no intensity then? I mean, is it that if there is no intensity, you will not give? Because Swami is telling, when there is intensity, there is spiritual progress. In fact, a measure of your spiritual progress is a measure of your intensity, actually. So if there is no intensity, there is no spiritual progress. So then Hislop is asking, Swami says he cannot give to a dry heart. Why is the heart dry then? Because why is there no that yearning for God, love for God? Because during the course of the discussion, Hislop has also asked Swami the question that Swami, love is something that all of us want, but it's not something that I manufacture. It's not that. So how do I get love for God? That question has also been asked. So another way of asking the same doubt, he says, Swami says that he cannot give to a dry heart. Why is the heart dry? And Swami's answer here again, it takes on another dimension altogether. It's so beautiful.
Right. And actually, if you look at it, I think the first chapter which we had done, the first two episodes, where again, this is one of the points where the conversation drifts off. And it's you can see that Hislop is not completed with that discussion and he's bringing it up here again. Because even that, Swami goes on to intensity and he says that you don't have the intensity, you don't ask with the same intensity. And that is why you don't progress. Right, and when he asks why there is no intensity, Swami says there is no love. Right, you love your life, but you don't love the destination as much as you love your own life. You know, I think something of that extent. Swami says this is probably, you know, going back to that and asking where is that intensity? Why is the heart dry? Swami would say, you know, you don't have that love. That's the part which is going to come later. But for this question that he's asking, Swami says that he cannot give to a dry heart. Why is the heart dry? Is the question Hislop is asking. Probably we'll just read out that paragraph, which is Swami's answer for that. Swami says, God gives even that for our own good. When you aren't hungry, why should he give you food? When you are hungry and receive food, it is useful. But if you aren't hungry and he gives you food, you will have indigestion. Sometimes, even if you are hungry, God doesn't give you food, just to keep you in check and control. Suppose you are in the hospital, they can't give you everything you might ask for. There is a proper time and a proper way for your own sake. Sometimes God withholds even a spiritual experience because God does everything for man's good. He never does anything to harm man or give him sorrow. But you must have that faith. First, you must grapple with the fact that duty is God and start doing your duty.
So two things that Swami says is that even the hunger is something that God allows to come, you know, the heart being dry also, because it's possibly the most parched earth that can appreciate the value of water. In fact, it's almost like you make water flow on a land on which water has already flowed versus a land which is dry and devoid of water. You can hear the land drinking the water and slaking its thirst. I know I am being poetic over here, but it's almost like that, you know, you can hear the land, it soaks up, there's a crackling sound, and you almost feel that this land has yearned for water more. Whereas if you have another piece of land which is already having water, two things that will happen is, first of all, when you pour water, you don't hear any of these crackling sounds, or you don't see the earth like sucking up the water. And second thing is, many times the water doesn't get absorbed fully also. It remains like a shallow pond or a lake on the surface, and finally it evaporates and gets wasted. If it has to be utilized completely, it has to be like parched earth. If you have really seen a piece of parched land and you pour little water on it, in no time it goes in. Not only does it go in, after some time you don't even see the area where you poured the water. You don't even know that. That is the level to which it's absorbed. So Swami is saying that sometimes that land is allowed to get dry because then the value of the water is appreciated more and it is absorbed. More than appreciated, is absorbed. Because if it's not appreciated, it's not absorbed. If it stays like a pond or a lake, it'll just get evaporated. So also we have seen this happening, you know, to a certain smaller extent. Like I remember as a student when I would come back after the vacation. That time, the vacation can be either the summer vacation or the winter vacation. It might be just for 3 days or for 10 days. When I come back, when I have the first darshan, the joy is so amazing. You know, it might not be a first line darshan. It might be in the 5th line or 10th line. Or forget that. Take the other case. Whenever we would come back to Prashanthi Nilayam, usually Swami would be in Vrindavan in the summer. So after that, we'll be waiting for Swami to come. We'll have 10 days, 15 days, June. June is passing by and Swami has not yet returned. Somewhere in the middle of June or towards the end of June or beginning of June, depending on Swami's will, he would arrive to Prashanthi Nilayam. And we would come to welcome him, and at that time, just seeing him step off the car, receive aarti and go to the residence would be such a joy, such a delight. And every year, in fact, I have made an entry in my diary about that, you know, about Swami's arrival. But then after that, you know, I think there's no other way of putting it but by saying that we are simply not having the same exuberance and thrill when we see him in darshan. To recreate that exuberance, maybe Swami should speak to me or call me for an interview or something like that. It's a case of like familiarity breeding, not contempt, but familiarity kind of breeding and kind of neglect. And therefore, that yearning would make the same darshan much more joyful, much more fruitful. In fact, I will go and write it down in my diary. But there are many days which have no entry in my diary. And I know for sure that those days Swami actually gave darshan. Why is it that I have not written anything? I mean, seeing him meant nothing. It's not that it meant nothing, but just the fact that I was dry earth possibly when Swami had not yet come, and then the wet earth. So Swami is saying here that even that hunger is given so that you appreciate food. I mean, it's one joy to have food when we are feeling hungry versus simply stuffing ourselves with food. When we are hungry, when we eat, the food tastes the best. In fact, sometimes, you know, when I go overboard praising the food, my mother or my mother-in-law, especially my mother-in-law, she tells me that, I think you must be very hungry, you know, because she says that I have not made anything very special. It is the same that I make every time, but you seem to be going overboard in appreciating it, possibly because you are more hungry. So, as I said, two things come out. First thing is that Swami is saying that even that hunger is given so that you are able to appreciate the food. The other aspect is that if you are not hungry, you may not appreciate the food so much. But if excess is given at that time, it might actually lead to indigestion, which is not good for you. And we see that happening in the spiritual sphere also. That we call as Maya, you know. Haven't we heard many of our possibly friends or classmates or even ourselves sometimes getting the thoughts like, why is Swami doing like this? What is this? This is such a simple thing. You know, basically thoughts which make us evaluate Swami or judge Swami like how we would judge any other normal human being. And Swami has warned us about that also. Swami has said, just because I walk with you, just because I talk like you, don't think of me like one of you, you know. I have come to be with you and behave like you so that one day you will rise to my level. Instead of that, don't bring me down to your level, but that is what would happen in our thoughts. And that I feel is indigestion. That is why possibly sometimes a summer vacation break would be good. Because Swami does everything for our good. If it was not good that we go for summer vacation, he would not. He would have told, these 5 years you are my student, be here only. But going for a summer vacation and coming back would actually make us more receptive, would kindle that hunger, would ensure that Bhagwan's grace don't go undigested. These are two points that Swami is so beautifully making. And these are some of the thoughts that arose in me when I read this.
It's a very, very beautiful point that Swami is making. In fact, I was reminded of one thing which Swami would tell in his discourses. Mm-hmm. That whenever he speaks about prayer, Swami would refer to the Gopikas and he would say that, you know, the Gopikas would make the prayer which is the most appropriate that all of you should learn. And Swami would quote these lines, which actually is a part of a song which Swami has written. Mm-hmm. Swami would say, Prema Rahita Maru Bhumulalo, mm-hmm. Premankuramulu Pempunda, Prema Veshamuto, Prema Sudha Varishamu Varishimpaga, Prema Nadulu Pravahimpaga Murali Ganamu Seyagade. Meaning of that is, in these barren fields without love, sow the seeds of love, and with love you shower the rain of love, so the rivers of love flow. So it's a poetic way of putting it, but Swami was, would refer to these lines and say that, you know, this is a very profound prayer because you are making two or three acknowledgements which are very, very important that a devotee has to do. One thing is that you're saying that my heart is barren. And you're also acknowledging that I cannot do anything by which I can get that love. That love has to come as a gift from you. And you have to also foster that love. Right? So Swami would say that, see, that is the truest prayer to make. Because once you have love, whatever you say, God will listen. Right? So you, instead of asking for this and that and saying that, you know, if I have this, my life is going to be settled. You ask for that by which you are prepared to receive everything from Swami. And that's why Swami would say that is the best prayer to make. But very, very beautifully Swami is, saying that if your heart is dry, that is a gift of God. And if that parched heart gets love from God, that is a gift of God. And even God staying away from giving you that gift is also a gift from God. So clearly Swami is talking about purely believing that whatever God does, He gives, He does not give, He delays, or He instantly responds. Everything has to be considered as God's grace.
In fact, for that only He gives the other analogy of, in a hospital, they won't give you whatever that you want to eat. I mean, food is going to give you nourishment, they know it, but there is a prescribed diet because you need it depending on the kind of illness you have or disease you have or the reason for which you have been admitted. And that only the doctor knows, and that is why it is best to trust the doctor. You know, I am reminded of an episode that was narrated by Bhagya sir. Did I narrate it? I don't know. If I have narrated it, stop me in the same satsang. Where he asks, you know, Swami comes and tells that all of you have only part-time devotion.
Right, I think last week we had
mentioned that. So Swami makes it very clear that there is only one devotion. The only true devotion is to accept whatever comes to you in life as this being best for me, this being good for me. Because if it was not best or not good, God would not have done this to me. And that is the way faith in God expresses. Means I have faith in God, meaning I don't complain about anything, I celebrate everything because everything is happening perfectly and the best. And Swami is telling, that is why first, but you must have that faith, Swami says here. But you must have that faith. You know, when Swami says, God withholds even a spiritual experience because God does everything for man's good. So if God is giving a spiritual experience, it's for your good. If He is withholding it, it's also for your good. Swami continues to say, He never does anything to harm man or give him sorrow. Whatever He does it for giving us joy. And joy of the permanent and true sense. Not temporary joy, the kind I get by possibly eating an ice cream. A joy that doesn't multiply, you know. It's not like if I eat one ice cream, I get this much joy. If I eat 100 ice creams, I get 100 times more joy. In fact, eating 100 ice creams might give me actually sorrow and give me sickness. Okay. So, this is a joy which the more I have, the more it multiplies. And it's of a permanent kind. It's always there. And in order to give that joy, there might be temporary discomforts. If I want good health, I will do push-ups, I will do exercise, which cause temporary discomfort to the body. In the same way, when I want to acquire knowledge, I possibly spend time, spend my focus, energy, concentrating on something, giving up playing video games or reading comics possibly as a student. So, I give up some pleasures and I take on some apparent pains because I want to get gains which are of a permanent nature. So too it is with that joy, and that is where we have to have faith and trust God. And so Swami says, for that you must have faith. And then He goes on to say, first you must grapple with the fact that duty is God and start doing your duty. You know, if we look again into this thing deeply, why we don't do our duty is because we get so many distractions, and all the distractions that come is because we are trying to do things to possibly better our lives or further our own selfish motives, because we think that we alone are the ones who are thinking of what is best for us. There's nobody else to think about it for me. That is why if indirectly, if I don't do my duty, it actually shows my lack of faith in God. Because when I have a faith in God that He is there to take care of everything, and in fact He's already doing it without me asking, whatever is happening is best for me, then I will just continue to do my duty. In fact, the other day I was reading a discourse in which Swami is stating that staying in Prashanti Nilayam, if you are thinking about your worldly needs, where you will get your next meal from, where, how will you fend for yourself financially, all this, if you start thinking, your spiritual progress is getting impeded. Because at a very deep level, it shows that I might be staying in Prashanti, but I am not in Prashanti, I am in Ashanti, because I don't have faith in God. And therefore, Swami is saying that for this, most important is to have faith, and possibly one way in which this faith expresses is by us doing our duty sincerely, considering it as God.
You know, one of the ways I'm looking at, you know, the connection between Swami saying that whether you have a dry heart, it's God's grace. Whether God decides to answer your prayers, it's God's grace. Whether you pray, it's God's grace. And when you get that understanding, you know, when you talk about duty, Swami would often say this, you know, when you say duty, it is about your responsibilities from the position where you are. You know, if you're a householder, or if you're somebody's son, if you're a policeman in the society or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Swami is saying that once you say that whatever is my situation is a grace of God, then being true to the duty that is that attaches itself to the role that you are playing becomes a way of expressing that I accept this as God's gift for me. Right? That's the only way you can actually, if you look at it, you know, if you look at the Mahabharata, I would often think of this, you know, what was the singular mistake that actually Karna does? Why he is, you know, he always is spoken of as doing something wrong, even though he was a very charitable person, he was a very noble person.
Very just
person. Right. Sometimes I fundamentally feel that he was not in a position to accept his present state of, whatever was his life. You know, he might have been born a Kshatriya, he might have born a prince. But he's in the, he gets adopted by a charioteer's family. That restlessness that does not allow you to accept your destiny or where you are placed. If you believe that whatever I am and wherever I am is a gift of God, you will not resist that or you will not revolt against that. The very fact that I don't agree with this, I don't want this, I want something else, that itself shows that you're not happy with where God has placed you. Right? So that's why there is a very important line of connection between you saying that whatever is in my life is a gift of God and you performing your duty. It's almost like what derives from the idea that I accept my life as it is. Then you have to perform your duty to perfection. In fact, later in one of the chapters, Swami speaks about this idea of duty and how performing duty is connected to surrender. We'll come to that later. But here in this case, I think Swami wants to continue with the concept of that dry heart or, you know, whatever is that discussion which is going on. Because after this, Hislop asked this question. Sorry.
When you were saying about Karna, you know, I just thought when you said that the fault in Karna was possibly that he did not accept his current situation, because of which he also didn't do his duty in a sense. Because, you know, at one point in time, you know, when he is complaining, Lord Krishna asks him, you know, you say that you were born as a Kshatriya, but you have been deprived. Then Krishna says, look around, you're not the only one like that. There are many like that. You know, there are many who have possibly been deprived. Swami says, but you were given something special that no others were given. I mean, when I say Swami says, it is like Krishna says. And what is it? You have made Angaraja. You have been made a king. Now, isn't it your duty that you do your bit for the people who fall in your lot? What have you done for the sons of other charioteers? What have you done for others who have been deprived like you? You have not done. You have been so focused on you fighting for your own thing. You don't realize that among that lot, you are the blessed one. You are actually looking at the other ones and thinking that you are the cursed one in this lot. But you forget that being the cursed one in one lot is also making you the blessed one in another lot. And since you are the most blessed one in that lot, is it not your duty to do something for that lot? You have not done anything at all. So you see, all this gets connected. I remember seeing this episode, this scene in one of the serializations of the Mahabharata that came on television, and it stuck in me. So, of course, there might be some kind of a dramatic license that the director has used to bring out this dialogue, but it's a very powerful point that we are so lost in comparing ourselves in those aspects which we seem to be lacking in, that we forget those aspects that we are already having. And actually, as I said, we don't do our duty because of this. If I at work, I'm not doing my work properly, it's because I have complaint about my boss, about my salary, about my... Basically, I'm comparing myself on those aspects which I think I'm lacking. But I don't see that there are so many other aspects in which I'm actually having. And therefore, there are many others who don't have that also. And instead of doing something for that lot, I'm always looking at the others and saying, they do nothing for me. So that is where we tend to avoid our duty. And this was a dialogue with Karna. When you brought up Karna, I remembered that. And so therefore, it's a two-way thing. One is that, you know, when I do duty, it shows that I have faith in God and I'm having acceptance. The other way is also true, that when I don't have faith, when I don't have acceptance, I won't be doing my duty because my mind will be focused on so many other things other than my duty.
And I think the bottom line is that acceptance. In fact, the other beautiful conversation from the Mahabharata is actually the story which is narrated to Dharmaraja about the Dharma Vyada, who's actually a butcher who's supposed to be an exponent of Dharma. Vyada actually means a hunter or a butcher, right? So he's supposed to be a dharmic butcher, if you could translate it that way. So when this question is asked by the saint to him, the renunciant to him, he says, but isn't there a mismatch between the profession that you're doing and your idea of spirituality? And because he's speaking about the highest spiritual truths. So that time he says that, see, I'm born in a family like this. I'm born in a butcher's family. The karmas that I would have done in my past would have brought me to this family, right? So he says, I take full responsibility for what I am today. Today, if I'm born in this family doing this profession, there must be some reason why God put me here. So it is not my lot to resist against the dharma of this role which I've been entrusted with. The very idea that you can continue to perform this duty and still reach out to the highest of spirituality is actually the essence of the spiritual path. Right? The very fact that you say that, I'm a lawyer or I'm in this. No, I have to come and do something here. You know, there are a lot of people who are caught up in that kind of a professional dilemma. I want to give up my job. I want to come and settle in Prashanti Nilayam. I want to give up this and I want to full-time do an orphanage like that. It is actually a silent way of saying that I cannot reach God doing what I am doing, which is actually a false idea. And when you say that I have faith in Swami, I have faith that whatever I am, whatever lot I am having is Swami's grace on me, it is also an acknowledgement that I completely accept whatever situation he's put me in and I will labor within that situation. And that's why the duty and surrender is inseparable in that sense.
Perfect. So the next question Hislop asks is it that the heart is dry because one is not doing one's duty? Now again here Swami doesn't actually answer it directly because possibly there's no direct answer other than saying yes, because Hislop says, is the heart dry because I'm not doing my duty? But just saying yes may be answering to the point, but missing out on so much wisdom that is there. And therefore, instead of stating the obvious, Swami gives a beautiful answer, which actually gives us the way ahead and gives us something concrete to follow and do. So Swami says, see, nobody's heart is really dry. When you're going on speaking about dry heart, Swami says there's no heart that is really dry. It's like saying there's no land that is actually dry because deep down everywhere there's water. And Swami says, men at least have sense love. You have sense love. At least you have worldly love for children, family and others. It is the same love, but it is given to some only. The only thing you have to do is to take it all and give it to God. That is what Swami says. So Swami says, it's like, hey Hislop, you're going on saying dry heart. But let me tell you that nobody's heart is dry. Because there is love. Yeah, it might be limited, it might be tainted, it might be colored, it might be different thing, but it is love. You may get muddy water, you may get salty water, you may get dirty water, you may get whatever. But it is water. Basic, it is water only. Only thing is to purify it, and that's what Swami says. So you have, whether it's for your children or family or whatever, for your pet or for your favorite TV serial, you have love, you have that. It only thing that you have to do is to take it all and give it to God.
And actually this answer is a very, very profound one, because when Hislop asked this question, is the heart dry? When Swami says no heart is dry, I think that's the fundamental basis of Swami's message, that there is no person who is actually a sinner, no person who is a completely ungodly person. The very fact, the very basis of Swami's message is that there is divinity in each one. So as long as there is divinity in a person, there is no question of a person being completely dry in that sense. But as Swami was explaining here, it might be covered, it might be colored, it might be impure in a certain manner. And also the other fact which Swami very, very clearly says, that, there is only one love. It is not like a love which is the love which you show towards your parents, a different love which you show towards your siblings, a different kind of love which you show towards your, beloved or something like that. Swami is saying that love is only one. It depends on where it is turned, it gets that name. And Swami would say the same love, when it is turned towards God, it becomes devotion.
Mm.
And Swami would also say that in all these loves also, there is actually pure love. It's just that the attachment kind of makes it a little less pure than what it is possible, what it can possibly be. And that's the whole process. When you turn it towards God, you know, Swami would give this example. You know, when you're trying to perfect love, you actually turn it towards somebody whose love is perfect. If I'm trying to perfect my love and I'm turning it towards another person who's also in the process of doing that, the success rate is that much lesser, that many, you know, points lesser, or whatever, however you can put it. But when you're trying to perfect it, when you turn it towards Swami, you know that the other end is at least stable and it is perfect. And you can actually straighten your end, right? And those are two points actually which is very, very beautiful and very central to Swami's message as such.
And that is what Swami says, because it's almost like a visitor is interrupting in between. And he says that if your heart was completely dry, you would not have wanted to come to Prashanthi Nilayam also. It's almost like he says that, but Swami continues from there. He says, even in coming to Prashanthi Nilayam, you love your wife, your family. Love is God, live in love. Love itself is God. And Prem, just what you said, means what you summarized just now. He is nothing else but love. There are different forms of love. Love for family, love for money. But love for God is given the name devotion. There's a glass of water. An Englishman will call it water. An Andhra man will call it by another name, which is, Neeru.
Neelu.
In Tamil, still another name, Tanni.
Right.
Malayalam, it's Vellam. Kannada also, it is Neeru. Hindi, it is Pani. These are my additions, not what Swami said there. But Swami says, but the water is the same. We just call it by different names. The names of love for wife, for children, for objects, they all differ. One is called Vatsalyam, one is called Moha, one is called Sakhyam. All those things vary. But love for God is called Bhakti or devotion. But the love is one. The most important thing you have to develop is love. If you develop love, you don't have to develop anything else. That is what Swami says very categorically and very clearly.
The first sentence that Swami is making is actually very, very important. I think all of us as devotees will have to look at it, because the visitor, what he is saying is that, you know, the very fact that people are coming to Prashanthi Nilayam means that there is some kind of connect with divinity or some spiritual instinct.
Your heart is not dry.
Swami is saying not necessarily. You can even come to Parthi out of love for your family, out of your love for your wife.
Mm.
How true is that? How many of us come to Swami because we want to protect somebody else whom we love? We don't come to Swami because we love Swami. We come to Parthi because we love our children and we want them to be safe. We love our family and we want them to be, you know, protected from some kind of calamity. Or we love our business and we don't want the business to fail, so we come to Swami.
That is what you're speaking of devotees. There are some others, like when we speak of, who came to Parthi literally for doing this. You know, the wife is wanting to come to Swami,
right,
and
even that
I want to be an escort for my wife, and that's all. And it's not that I'm interested in anything. So even in that sense, for the sake, when Swami says, because you love your wife and family, you're coming, it's literally that.
Right. Swami is saying, don't conclude that everybody who comes to Parthi, you know, has that wetness of devotion in their heart. That is also not a conclusion that you have to come to. So very beautifully Swami is balancing the whole thing. Swami is saying, yes, nobody's heart is dry, but that does not mean everybody's heart is prepared for that love for God. Even if they are coming to Prashanthi Nilayam, they might be coming for other reasons. I think this is again something which Swami would often say, how many of you really come for me, right? And only when, going back to what Swami was telling Bhagya sir and what you were referring to last week, see, only when you are coming for Swami, you will look beyond the difficulties which come. Because otherwise, the moment difficulties come, you'll turn some other way to protect the people around you and, you know, your interests in that sense. The only when your love is turned towards Swami, you'll say, it's all right. It's a difficulty to my body, but my focus is on Swami.
On that note, dear listeners, we'll take a quick little break. After the break, we'll continue where we are leaving off now, which is where Swami is saying that if you develop love, you don't need to develop anything else. And Hislop has a question immediately about that. As I said, that will continue after this little break. So don't go anywhere. Another 3-4 minutes time, we'll be back with our discussion.
మోహన మురళి నూరు చునుక పరి గానము చేయగరే కృష్ణ గానము చేయగరే హృదయములు పాషాణంబులు కరగి కరగి నీరై ప్రవలింప గానము చేయగరే గానము
Welcome back, dear listeners. So now we were in that point of the discussion where Swami says that if you develop love, you don't have to develop anything else. And Hislop asks, but love is not something made by man. Love is not something created by man. How can I develop love? See, in the course of a conversation with Swami, many times it happens that we miss the significance or import of what Swami is speaking, because each word, each sentence Swami says is something that we have to ponder upon and spend time and understand its full deep import. So, you know, when we are going through and discussing, I think Prem, you just mentioned about 10-15 minutes back where you said that if it is dry, you have to just yearn for that water. You have to crave for that water. And then whether if the water comes, you have to celebrate it as Bhagwan's blessings. If the water doesn't come, that also you have to celebrate it as Bhagwan's blessings. If the heart continues to remain dry, you have to celebrate that also as Bhagwan's blessing, because Swami knows what is best for us. And I think there itself is the answer, that our job is to just wait and yearn for that. But Hislop again asks Swami that love is not something made by man, love is not something created by man, so how can I develop love? it is not, as the song just now that you played beautifully says, that love for God is something that love God only has to give. And therefore, I'll just wait and yearn, you know. Possibly that is the answer, that if I feel that I don't have love for God, how to get love for God? I may not have love for God, but do I yearn for love for God? You know, I have to yearn for love for God, then that love for God will be given. So, he anyway asked that question, but love is not something made by man. How do I develop love? And Swami gives another beautiful example, you know. Again, instead of hitting it straight on the face that you have to yearn for love for God, Swami says, you have love for the tape recorder. This is possibly the one in which Hislop is taping the entire interview. Swami says, how is it that you have love for the tape recorder? When the tape recorder was in the shop, you did not love it. But because you have got it now and it is yours, my tape recorder. You did not love it in the shop. You love it now because you feel it is mine. So when you think God is mine, you love him. Wow, what a beautiful and simple answer.
And again, it's a very, very beautiful answer. In fact, again, going back to, this is very consistent with Swami's fundamental message and, you know, whatever Swami refers to of Vedanta. Because if you, there's another Sanskrit word for love, which is called mamta, right? Even in Hindi it is used. The basis of that word is mama, mine. So they say that when you feel that something is yours, it's very easy for you to love. And that's why they say it's attachment is actually a form of love, but attachment is probably a contorted form of love. And that's why when attachment makes you do something which is wrong, then it becomes a very dangerous form of love. But actually attachment also is a form of love. There's no doubt about that, because it starts from the same point where you say, this belongs to me. And, you know, very beautifully Swami says that, you know, that tape recorder analogy is so nice. I think later also in another part, Swami says that. Swami explains that, or I think I've heard it in Hislop's talk where he explains that thing. Swami says, see, how many times you would have gone past that corridor where this tape recorder was in the, in the shelf where it's being displayed. But you would have not felt anything towards it. The moment you go inside, pay some money and buy it, Swami says that you're holding it like dear life, no. Right? Wherever you go, you're looking if it's, you know, you're wondering whether it's safe. If you're going in the car, you're ensuring that, you know, you take it along. You ensure that you don't leave it in the car. Swami is saying, where did that love suddenly come from? It's the same object you were seeing every day. And Swami would also give the other example of, a neighbor. Swami would say that you're growing up in a particular house, and in a neighboring house there's a girl, and you've been neighbors for so many years, right? And Swami would say that there's a point in time when that girl is actually down with a very serious illness, where probably she's admitted in the hospital and she's about to die, and doctors save her and she comes back alive. You might have not felt anything. That would have been news for you, that somebody in your neighborhood is so sick. But the moment after many years you get married to the same girl, Swami says the slightest headache for that girl, you start suffering. Swami says, where does that come from? It comes from the feeling that this person belongs to me. So that love has that source in the feeling of, this is mine, this belongs to me.
Just to amplify what you said, I was reminded of how, you know, when I bought my car second hand, it's a second hand car, so it has its own bruises and knocks or whatever. I try to beautify it as much as possible, but even that car when I park, I am so, you know, careful to ensure that it's not under a tree where birds might sit and put droppings on it, or nothing damages. There are 5 dents, of course, but I don't want a 6th dent on it. You know, with a second hand car, the same thing. You walk across possibly a Mercedes-Benz showroom, it's a brand new car, you don't care anything for it. So it's not about anything that has got to do with the value of the car per se. The value of my car possibly might be 100 or 1,000 times lesser than the value of the Mercedes-Benz car parked in the showroom. And I may not feel anything, even if the whole showroom catches fire. As you said, I might just feel, oh, okay, it's a sad thing that so many things went off. But same thing, I might feel more intensely if my second-hand car gets an additional dent apart from the 5 that it already has. And that is what is that, you know, as I said, I'm just amplifying what you said. That is that minus. When I feel something is mine, then automatically the love comes. So Swami is saying that if you feel that Swami is yours, Swami belongs to you, automatically that love will come. And therefore, the path ahead is, how much of this minus can I turn towards Swami? I start telling my house is mine, my wife, my relations, my vehicle, my clothes, my. If I can reduce some of that and turn it towards Swami. In fact, when I look at my own life, I feel this is what happened. You know, I always have suffered or received kicks by getting attached to so many people. I just don't know how, what is the middle way. Either a person means nothing to me or a person means so much to me. That is how my mentality or my character or my nature has been. Because of which I got into many troubles. Of course, it's fault on my side. I mean, this is not normal that a person is either a nobody or a person is somebody who matters a lot. You can just generally have an acquaintance. I never seem to have this thing called acquaintance or a meeting or something like that. Because of which I would get very attached and I would suffer. And every time, you know, the solution that was given to me by many well-wishers was that, Arvind, you have to get over your attachment. You get attached to people, it's wrong. Give up attachment. And I used to feel it is so difficult to give up attachment because attachment seems to be my nature. In fact, I used to tell them back that I am like a tree and I'm like the tree root. The tree root's nature is to get attached. You don't tell the root, don't get attached. Root's nature is to get attached and I seem to have a nature of getting attached. So your solution is not helping me. When you tell that you're talking to your friend, don't get attached to him. You're talking to your sister, don't get attached to her. Don't get attached. It is not helping me because I get attached by nature. And this went on for many years. Finally, you know, not directly by words, but what Swami inspired and what was so beautiful was, Swami said, don't change your nature as a root. Change the soil. Get attached. Get very firmly attached. But to Swami. And that was the solution that came. That converted my so-called weakness into what I consider today as my greatest strength. That is, get attached to Swami. And automatically, the moment you get attached to Swami, the other attachments seem to be just, you know, waning away. It is not so intense now. And honestly, I can cross my heart and say that I don't suffer so much from these attachment to people ever since this idea or this solution came up. And therefore, I feel practically, it is so important that we start developing this feeling of minus. And this attachment to Swami can come if we feel Swami is mine. If I feel Swami as a distant being who is somewhere in Prashanthi Nilayam only or in some other place or in a photograph or in my altar alone, then possibly it will not come. He should be a living presence in my day-to-day life. Then when I'm able to do that, automatically the attachment for him will come, and when that attachment comes, that minus will come. With that minus, the love will automatically come.
I don't know if it's completely relevant, but I was just thinking of something which I had a conversation with one of my friends.
Mm-hmm.
Also, unfortunately, happens to be a Swami student, but for a reason, not that, you know, it's mm-hmm. completely bad in that sense. He had a very tough patch in his life, you know, after his education, after his research and all that. I think he got married, the marriage didn't work or something. So he took to the habit of drinking, and he took the habit of overeating, actually. So he was saying that there was a period about 3 or 4 years when he did all the things which he knew that Swami will not approve of. Mm. But he was saying that he was mentally in that space where he could not stop himself. You know, that became like a getaway from the problems that he was going through. So he was saying that after 4 years of misusing his body that way, he eventually went to a doctor for some purpose, and then the doctor told, you're having very, very high sugar. And if you don't cut down on your food and discipline your life, you're going to go down. You know, this is going to be a very dangerous route that you're taking. So then when I met him, he was saying that he's in a very strict diet, and it kind of has brought back his, you know, joy for life or whatever it is. So mm-hmm. he's quit his drinking, he's quit all his bad habits, and he's following a very strict diet, jogging and everything. So I was thinking, let's see how much love we have for ourselves. The moment the doctor comes and says, your life is in danger, the point which Swami was making in one of the earlier interactions in the same book, and Swami says, how much you love your life. When you're driving a car, the very fact that you love your life makes you drive the car properly. So Swami, I mean, how much love we have for our life when the doctor comes and says that your life is in trouble, we are ready to give up all the bad habits. How much love we have for Swami, that for Swami we are not ready to give up these things. So when Swami says you can develop love for Swami, again the same thing, when you say that Swami is mine, how much importance is that feeling that Swami is my possession? how much are you feeling that this is the greatest possession that I have, that will automatically make you do all of the right things which Swami likes. Right? That is, I think that is where many of us actually fall apart, I mean, self included. I think that's something we have to ask ourselves, do we love Swami more than I love myself? Then all the things which we would otherwise do, it will be so easy to give away because Swami doesn't like it. Right? Otherwise, we'll find reasons to justify what we're doing, saying that I was depressed or, you know, oh, Swami won't mind. Oh, Swami, you know, he loves everybody. He will not be upset with me if we're doing all of these convenient philosophy will come in.
Mm. And it's so important that we actually, you know, go and take the plunge. How long will you be, will we be thinking and talking? I mean, it is time for action. The a visitor at this point in time, when Swami says that, when you think of God as mine, you love Him. A visitor says that, Swami, I make an effort to strengthen love, but I know it does not happen. He says, I'm making an effort to strengthen love, but I know it doesn't happen. Again, the straightforward answer is, straight on the face answer would be, put in more efforts then, that's all. You know, try more. That's all it is if it's not happening. But once again, Swami beautifully always puts it in a very neat way and with a beautiful analogy. Swami says, it is a question of practice. Intellectually, you understand. Say you have a temperature, 105 degree fever. If you keep on chanting 100 times, I want penicillin injection, I want penicillin injection, it won't cure you. You have to take the injection. You don't have to chant that you want penicillin. You just have to have one shot and you're all right. Instead of thinking of 10 different things to do, if you do one thing correctly, that is enough. When you're thirsty, you don't want to drink all the water in the well. One glass will suffice. You don't have to take all and try to practice everything. Take one. Here's a matchbox with some 60 matches. If you want to light a fire, you need to strike one match, not the entire box of matches. So, again, Swami is saying that you take the first step. Do it. I mean, how long will you continue to debate and think and stop yourself from taking the plunge? If you want to learn how to swim, after whatever you have done, your thinking and everything, put on your dress or whatever, dive into the water. That is the only way you can. Dive in and struggle and flap about, and if you still feel you're not getting it, yes, look at someone, try to learn, but finally you have to splash about your hands and legs and get the technique right, and then you'll start swimming. Because however good a coach is, unless you get into the water, you can't learn how to swim.
It's a very beautiful point that Swami is making about effort. In fact, I want to play out one small story with Swami is narrating, where he's reiterating the same point, where you know that God is the refuge. You know that you have to turn to God when you're in trouble. But Swami says, even then, what you have to do, you have to do. You know, it's almost a summary of whatever Swami has told so far about doing your duty and also taking God as your refuge. And at the same time, Swami is also actually emphasizing the importance of sadhana. That even though you know that no effort of yours is actually going to give you love, because that's what Swami says, it's finally got to come from God. But even then, there is some sadhana that has to be done, and that is your duty. So Swami is narrating this. This is actually a Telugu discourse. Swami delivered this without a translation. So not all may be able to understand it, but probably at the end of it, we'll try to give you a summary of what Swami is saying. More than that, I think most people will be able to follow the story, because the narration is simply brilliant. You know, just with so much humor, I think only Swami can tell such a profound story.
ఈ దేహంతో మన శక్తి ఉన్నంత వరకు మనం కర్మ ఆచరించడానికి కూనుకోవాలి, పవిత్రమైనటువంటి యొక్క కర్మలో మనం పాల్గొనాలి. కానీ మనం అంతా భగవంతుడే చేస్తాడని మన శక్తిని కూడా నువ్వు దుర్వినియోగం చేసుకుని ఏమాత్రమైనా మన యొక్క సాధనకు మనం ప్రయత్నం చేయకుండా అది ప్రయోజనం లేదు. అందువల్ల భగవంతుని యొక్క అనుగ్రహం మనకు ప్రార్థించదు. దీనికి ఒక చిన్న ఉదాహరణ, మనం చేయి శుభ్రపరచుకోవాలంటే జలం చాలా అవసరమే. కానీ ఇది జన్మ జన్మాంతరం యొక్క సంస్కారం అనేటువంటి యొక్క జిడ్డు చేతికి ఉండడం చేత ఒక్కటూ నీటితో ఈ జిడ్డు పోయేటువంటిది కాదు. దానికి ఏదైనా సోపు లేక షాంపూ లేక చీకాయలు లేక కూపుకాయలు ఏదో ఒక పదార్థాన్ని దానికి ఉపయోగపెట్టుకున్నప్పుడు ఆ జిడ్డు చాలా త్వరగా పోతుంది. కనుక మన యొక్క భక్తి అనేటువంటిది కేవలం వాటర్ వంటిది. జపము ధ్యానము యోగము అనేటువంటిది అంతేకాను సోపు షాంపూ చీకాయలు వంటివి. కానీ ఈ రెండింటి యొక్క సమ్మిళితం చేతనే మన యొక్క ఇది హృదయం శుభ్రమైపోతుంది. కనుకనే సాధనలు లేకుండా దైవమే చూసుకుంటుంది. చూసుకుంటాడే, పుట్టించిన వాడు తానే అన్నం పెట్టాడే అని చోడు మీద మాట్లాడి కూర్చుంటే ఈ భగవంతుడు ఏమాత్రం కూడా అంగీకరించాడు. పరోపకారమైనటువంటి సమాజ సేవ అయినప్పుడు మనం చేయాలి. దీనికి ఒక చిన్న కథ ఉంటుండాలి. ఒక సంగీత విద్వాంసుడు ఉండేటువంటి వాడు, అతను కొంతమంది ట్యూషన్ పెట్టుకుని ఆ పిల్లలకు చక్కగా నేర్పిస్తూ ఉండేటువంటి వాడు. కానీ పరీక్షలు సమీపించినాయి. దిన్నము 7 గంటలకు పోవటము, 12 గంటలకు ఇంటికి రావటము జరుగుతూ ఉండేటువంటి ఇంత పూర్వం. కానీ ఒకనాడు స్పెషల్ క్లాసులు తీసుకోవటం చేత 1 అయింది, 2 అయింది, 3 అయింది, ఇంకా భర్త ఇంటికి రాలేదు. కానీ భార్య 12 గంటలకు వంట వండుతుంది, ఇంకా భర్త రాలేదే అని చూచింది. 1 అయింది, 2 అయింది, లోపల దిగులు పుట్టింది. ఏమో రోడ్లో ఏమైనా వస్తుంటే ఏ కారో ఏ మోటార్ సైకిలో ఏదైనా యాక్సిడెంట్ కొట్టిందో ఏమో అని తనకు దిగులు ప్రారంభమైపోయింది. కానీ 3 గంటలకు ఇంటికి వచ్చాడు, ఆకలైంది. ఈయన కూడా పాపం భోజనం చేయకుండా కాసుకొని ఉంటున్నారు. కానీ ఈ కాలం భార్య లేకపోతే తాను భుజం చేసి అతనికి ఏదో ఒక టింకాలు పెట్టింది. కానీ ఆ యొక్క ఇల్లాలు ఆ విధంగా చేయలేదు. భర్తకు పుట్టిన తర్వాతనే తాను భుజించడం ఆనాటి వాడుతారు. సరే వచ్చాడు. ఏమిటండి ఇంతసేపు అయిపోయింది, స్నానం చేసి త్వరగా రండి, నాకు ఆకలి అవుతాను, ఇద్దరు కూర్చొని ఫోన్ చేద్దామని భార్య. వెనుకకు ఒక చిన్న బాబు ఉంటుంటే ఆ బాబు దగ్గరికి పోయాడు. త్వరగా చక్క వదిలిపెట్టాడు, బకెట్ వదిలాడు, నీళ్లు తోడుకున్నాడు, తలపై పోసుకుని త్వరగా సోపు వేసుకున్నాడు. కానీ ఆ సోపును మోహానికంతా వేసుకున్నాడు పాపం. బకెట్ తీసుకుని బావిలో విచ్చడానికి అని కన్నులు మూసుకున్నాడు. విచ్చేటప్పటికీ ఆ బకెట్ తాడు బావిలో పడుతుంది. కన్నులు మూసుకున్నాడు ఈ యొక్క మనిషి ఆ బావి దగ్గర చెప్తున్నాడు, భారము నీదేనా ప్రభో, భారము నీదేనా అని అలాపం మొదలుపెట్టాడు. సరే భార్య ఇంటిలో పోయి చట్టలో అంతా వదిలించింది. ఈ వినింది ఏమిటో అని పరిగెత్తి వచ్చింది పాపం. ఏమిటండి ఇంకా మీరు సంగీతం చేస్తున్నారు, త్వరగా రాండి అని ఆలోచించింది. ఇదేం జవాబు చెప్పడం లేదు. సరే ఈమెకేమైపోయింది, ఈమె తల చెడిపోయిందా ఏమని దగ్గరికి పోయింది. ఏమిటండి 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 అని కొట్టింది పాప. అప్పుడు కూడా అదే పాట మొదలుపెట్టాడు. సరే ఈమె లోపలికి వెళ్ళింది, చెబుతూ నీళ్ళు తెచ్చింది, మొహానికి కొట్టింది. అంతా గ్రూప్ చేసి ఏమిటండి ఈ యొక్క పరిస్థితి, ఎందుకోసం ఉద్యోగాలు ఆకలిపాలేదా అని ప్రశ్నించింది. బకెట్ బావులో పడిపోయింది, నేనేం చేసేది అన్నారు. అప్పుడు ఆ భార్య చెప్పింది, ఒట్టి సోండే పోతా, ఎవరైనా చెప్పితే ఆ బకెట్ దిగి బకెట్ తీస్తారు, కానీ బకెట్ దగ్గర బావులో పడిపోయింది అని బావు దగ్గర కూర్చొని భారము నీదే అంటే బకెట్ వస్తుందా, ఈ ప్రయత్నం నువ్వు చేయాలి అని భర్తకు చక్కని తన యొక్క కర్తవ్యాన్ని ఆచరించమని బుద్ధి చెప్పింది. కనుక మన శక్తి ఉన్నంత వరకు మనం పనిచేసే ప్రయత్నం చూడుకోవాలి. కానీ శక్తి ఉండినా కూడా భారము నీదే భారం నీదే కూర్చుంటే మనకేమాత్రం చూడలేదు. ఇది సోమరితనంగా ఉంటుంది, లేజినెస్ గా ఉంటుంది. మన కర్తవ్యాన్ని మనం నిర్వర్తించుకుంటూ దైవాన్ని కొన్ని రకమైనటువంటి దీంతో మనం స్మరించుకుంటూ కాలం గడుపుకోవటం చాలా పవిత్రం.
సో దట్ వాస్ ద స్టోరీ. అండ్ for those of you who followed Telugu would have really enjoyed that narration. It's a very, towards the end, it's actually one simple message which we told, that you know what Swami is saying here, but so very beautifully Swami builds that entire image. But
even before the story, Prem,
even before the story, probably that initial part which Swami spoke was also very important. Swami was saying, let's see, when you want to clean your body, you use water. And only water is not enough. So you need some soap or
Swami
some
says, Jiddu,
shampoo.
Swami says, if you're having grease and dirt, grime right. on you, it won't go away with water, how much ever you pour.
Right. So you need some
soap,
kind
shampoo,
of detergent.
Shikakai.
Right. Something like that you need. Swami is saying, see, that is for the normal dirt of the body. What about the dirt which is accumulated over many lifetimes? So if that has to go, for that also you need the similar process. So Swami is saying water is like bhakti. So bhakti alone will not wash it off. You need the sadhana, which is like the soap or the shampoo or the shekai or whatever it is.
And that example makes it so so clear, no, Prem. Like without the soap and the shikakai, which is the sadhana, your bhakti alone is not enough. But if you have to choose between only soap or only water, you will definitely choose water over it.
Right.
Because only soap is absolutely of no use.
Right.
So to get the perfect, you need both. But given a choice of only one, bhakti is still better. I mean, if we do only all these so-called intellectual gymnastics, if that feeling of love is not there, it's of absolutely no use.
Exactly. And so Swami is saying that it's, and even if you have surrender, it doesn't mean that you can be, you can give yourself to inaction. And that's why Swami tells that very beautiful story. Probably to, I'll try to be as comprehensive as what Swami was saying. Swami was telling that there is this Vidwan or a musician who used to take classes for children. And he would often, his regular routine was he would return home by 12 o'clock. So Swami says that because of exams or something like that, he's having special classes. So one day he doesn't return till 3 in the afternoon. So the wife has made the food, she's prepared the lunch and she's waiting for him to come back. And then Swami says that he's not returned till 1:32 and she gets very tense. She's thinking about the traffic in the road and she's thinking, oh, what has happened to him? Has he fallen somewhere? Has anything happened to him? So this man comes at 3 o'clock and then Swami says that, see, the practice of those days, the wife would wait till the husband comes back, serves and eats along with him. And Swami says, if it's the modern housewife, then she would have by now eaten her food and put the food for him in a tiffin box and kept it aside. Swami says, no, she's an ideal woman, so she is waiting for husband. But then Swami very beautifully says, the moment the husband comes, she says, hey, what happened? Why have you come so late? So he says, go get freshened up and come, we'll have our food. So she goes into the kitchen and she starts serving. The husband goes into goes to the backyard of the house and, you know, traditionally there would be the well. And beside the well is where they would actually have their bath. So the husband, Swami says that, you know, he undresses himself, he pours water on himself, then applies the soap. Then he applies the soap on his face, his eyes are closed. And then he's trying to reach out to the bucket and the bucket falls into the well. And being a musician, so generally musicians, or in fact, you don't have to be a musician for that. All of us are bathroom singers. You know, when you have bath, you tend to hum a song or a bhajan or something like that.
But he's a musician because there's not a bathroom. He's in the open courtyard, right, taking bath in from the well.
So only a musician would dare to sing in such
open courtyard, yes.
And then Swami sings one particular kirtan. The meaning of that kirtan is, you know, the burden of my welfare lies in your hand. Bharamu nidera. It's like telling God that my welfare is your burden. Right? Mm-hmm. So Swami says he starts singing that bhajan and singing that song and keeps repeating that line again and again. And the wife is wondering what has happened to this fellow. He comes out, sees this man, you know, struggling to open his eyes. So she asks, what happened? And he again sings the same line. He says, my refuge, God is my refuge, or whatever. Then she takes a bucket of, I mean, a mug of water, pours it on his face and asks him, tell me what happened. And the husband says, no, the bucket fell into the well, so I'm not able to wash my face. So then the wife says, see, if the bucket has fallen into the well, you should call out to somebody to come and help you. What is the point in going on saying that God will help me, God will help me, God will help me? What is within your reach? What is the duty that you can perform, that you have to perform, because that is also a gift that God has given you. So you cannot give yourself to laziness and say that, you know, this is my problem, God come and protect me, God come and protect me. What you have to do, you have to do. That is part of your duty.
But you know, Prem, though Swami didn't state it, what I just felt after listening to the whole thing was, Swami says that when you have been given the ability, that ability is also God's gift. So use it to do it. Don't simply sit. Simply sitting and singing, God will help, God will help, God, you only take care, it won't work. And Swami has also told the Chinnakatha of how, you know, a farmer is told, call Hanuman, but when he pushes the wheel of the cart which is stuck in the mud and then calls unto Hanuman, he suddenly feels an added strength. So, it is almost like God helps those who help themselves. So, you also do your bit. But what I ultimately felt is Swami is just being humble here because ultimately, his face got washed actually, you know. Though this person didn't do anything and if you are sincere in that way, I mean, sincerity is so important that through his wife, he said, Bharamu Nidera, but Bharyamu Nidera. I mean, his wife came and actually washed his face. It worked. Means God also sent somebody and it happened. So finally, means calling out to God, definitely God is there waiting to respond. God is always waiting to respond, but we think that we restrict God's response to some ways. I think that God has to come down, pick up my bucket and give me. Means I don't consider it as Swami's blessing that I have the ability to bend and pick the bucket myself. you know, there was this student who once told me how Swami came in his dream and gave him the question paper of what was going to come in the exam the next day and told him not to tell anyone. He was a weak student and he scored well in the exam. I was just thinking, how unfair it is, Swami, that you are giving the question paper to somebody, why you didn't give it to me? When I told this to another of my classmates, he said that, Arvind, it is wrong to think that somebody is blessed because he got Swami's dream in which Swami gave him the question paper. Because he gave you the ability because of which you don't need a question paper leak. Without that itself, you have got good marks. Why do you think of this ability as a lesser gift? This is also a gift of God. So, actually, we will realize that whatever we have, whatever we don't have, whatever we seem to be lacking, everything is God's gift. Actually, it has been perfectly given. If we start, you know, as Mother Teresa said, not Mother Teresa, I'm sorry, it was Helen Keller. You know, for those who are unaware, Helen Keller was born blind and deaf, because of which she also was mute for a long time in life, because if you're deaf, how can you learn how to speak? So she didn't have three of the five sense organs that we usually have. But Helen Keller is today such an inspiring personality. People have got inspired by her because of what she has achieved. I will not go into details of what she has achieved, but I wanted to give one of her quotes in which she said that, I don't complain in life because I don't have enough time to count the blessings that I have been given. If a person devoid of three of the five sense organs could say this, then I don't think that any of us have any right to complain. Because honestly, if we start counting our blessings, there will be far too many. And as I said, you know, God is simply waiting to respond, waiting for us to call. Even in the case of this man who is apparently being lazy, through his wife, Swami responded. God responded and actually had ensured that even without him doing anything, the soap from his face was washed away. In this context, as a little aside, you know, I am reminded of one story. It is very popular in India, the stories of Akbar and Birbal, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, Akbar, the emperor, the Mughal, great Mughal emperor, he is talking to Birbal, who is from India, who is from the Sanatana Dharma. He says, Birbal, one thing I don't understand is you have this concept of God coming as an avatar, you know, to earth so many times. If God is so powerful, why does he have to come, you know? Why can't he just set everything right sitting from there, you know? He can do everything. He's all so powerful. Why does he himself have to keep coming down again and again? This is what he asked Birbal. And Birbal apparently doesn't have any answer, and Akbar thinks that he has put him in a spot. Birbal was one of his favorite ministers. And Akbar was a great Sarvadharma kind of man, you know. He appreciated all religions. In fact, among his ministers, he ensured that he had people representing different religions, so that he was a very liberal kind of ruler. So when he asked this to Birbal, it is said that the legend goes that Birbal gets a wax statue that resembles the emperor's grandson. And 3 days later, when they are taking a stroll, Birbal has planted a person in such a way that he comes and throws the wax statue into the water, into the lake, and starts screaming that the emperor's grandson has fallen in the lake, emperor's grandson has fallen in the lake. Hearing this, the Emperor Akbar rushes and jumps into the lake only to discover that it's his idol. And he's enraged and he says, who is this playing this prank on me? That is when Birbal says, please forgive me, O Emperor. I did this with a reason. It is I who am responsible. But I just want to ask you one question before you can punish me. And that question is, you have so many guards around. You have so many people who are good swimmers. You have so many servants. You are the Emperor. You could have sent anybody to rescue your grandson. Why did you yourself jump? And Akbar says, Birbal, honestly, I didn't think of all that. When I heard my grandson was in trouble, I just jumped. Birbal says, that is because you love your grandson so much. And that is the way it is with God, O Emperor. His love is so much that I don't think he sits and thinks that I can set this right by doing this or this. If there is a need, I will myself go. And that's what Swami says, if you need me, you deserve me. That's why, yes, of course, so beautiful. We just need to call out and put in the effort, as Swami says, because once we put in the effort, God will definitely respond.
In fact, I think the next chapter is where we will get a little more clarity on this, where, you know, on one hand we say that God is the final refuge and he's the one who's going to do everything for us. You know, even when you're talking about having love in your heart, we were saying that you just have to ask God. There's nothing that you can do. But again, then Swami is saying that, but you have to do your part. So what is your part and how do you do your part? I think that that confusion gets cleared in the next chapter, which will probably come in the next fortnight. But we'll continuing with what Swami is saying in this conversation. After a certain point, actually, Swami withdraws from explaining further. And the reason for that is the next few interactions which happens, where Hislop asks Swami, in a very cryptic manner, he says, Swami, in the hospital, each patient has a principal disease.
It's obviously in reference to Swami saying that when you go to a hospital, you may not be given the food,
right,
you know. So,
right.
With that respect,
right.
I think. Yeah.
So then he says, each patient has a principal disease. Is the doctor able to know that principal disease? And then Swami replies to him, if he is a good doctor, yes. If he is just a degree, no. In the present day India, in the political field, people have studied very little, but because of politics, they get a doctor's degree. Right, so Swami is referring to the honorary doctorates which are conferred on people. So Swami is saying that if he is a good doctor, yes, the doctor immediately recognizes what is the source problem and accordingly he treats the patient.
Then Hislop continues, obviously he wants to ask a personal favor from Swami, because he says, then let the supreme doctor tell me what my chief disease is, not physical. He's saying, of course, not physical. I'm asking what's my chief disease, because he wants Swami to diagnose and give him the cure. Swami says, you do have this desire to go towards God. So he's reassuring his love. Don't worry, you have that. But you are just at that point how to go to it, and you're wanting to know. Now, this Swami cannot say before the others. He will say to you separately. Such problems are separate. Like the doctor, each patient he examines separately, not while everyone is in the room. So, I was just reminded of two little episodes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just sharing it with the feeling that I'm sharing it with my family members. You know, it's like, I remember at one point in time, you know, in Mumbai, suddenly there was a spurt in Devi Homams, you know.
Mm-hmm.
This Devi Yagna, everybody had to do Devi Yagna, Devi Yagna. And because this was coming from, as orders from the top, in the top brass in the state organization, they were encouraging this. And finally, the root cause was determined as, when this person who is a very important office bearer in the organization got an interview with Swami, in that Swami told him to do this. And because Swami told him to do this, he came and broadcast it to the whole universe and made it like a sadhana that the entire state and everybody has to do it. Now, we have to remember here what Swami is saying, that each patient's need is different and, each patient's need is different and therefore Swami gives a diagnosis separately. Therefore, when we have people coming and telling us, you know, Swami told this to me in the interview, I'm getting... I'm sorry, please forgive me. So when people come and tell that, you know, Swami told this to me in the interview and therefore we should all follow it. It is not like that, because each diagnosis is given personally for that being, for that soul's progress. And what Swami wishes to give as general nutrition, you know, when it is told that vitamins are good for you, vegetables are good for you, that is general nutrition. But you are told take a cough syrup, somebody else is told take a surgery, somebody else is told do that. That is not universal. That is depending on each person's need. Therefore, Swami's public discourses, I would like to emphasize this over and over again, that generally we should accept only what Swami has told in public discourses, because that is available for all and that is what he meant for all. That is why he told it in public. What he tells in private is possibly meant only for that individual. I'm not saying that you should not share what Swami said in private, but it should not be taken at face value and applied directly as is. Possibly it can be used only to take inspiration from and try to get our own private instruction from Swami. But don't take somebody else's private instruction and apply it across the whole world. One more incident I'm reminded of is this, you know, because many people say like this. There was this person in Thrai Brindavan, he got up and told Swami, Swami, regarding taking that egg. And Swami cut him off abruptly and said, hey, shut up, be quiet, later. You know, so, this much we could gather, that Swami had possibly advised him or somebody in his family to consume egg. No, you know, Swami said it later, because that it might be that person's specific need. You're told to take cough syrup, you're told to take a little bit of alcohol medicinally. It doesn't mean that Swami encourages alcohol. Publicly, Swami decries it. Swami says, no, alcoholism will take you away from Swami. If you take alcohol, you're committing a sin, you're not even a Sai devotee. But somebody, he might prescribe a medicine which possibly contains alcohol. In the same way, what Swami tells privately in an interview personally is for personal consumption. And I just thought of bringing it up here because Swami himself is saying this. Swami is saying that I can't tell you what your problem is and what is this in front of others. Tomorrow I'll call you separately and tell you. Imagine, this is an interview room session. Possibly there are only 5-6 people, that too, you know, these visitors, these are all part of Hislop's group. Even in such a group, Swami is telling it's so private, it's so personal that it can't be, you know, prescribed even for a common group. Therefore, I thought at this point we should drive home the message that what Swami says for universal consumption is what is available to us through his writings in the Vahinis and through his public discourses. Private interview, even if recording is available, it is private. Let us remember, it is private, and therefore it must be taken, for want of a better term, I'll say, with a pinch of salt or with a little bit of discrimination, and not be generally applied across all lives and say Swami said this to that person in this interview and therefore all my life I'll do this, even though it might be against what Swami has said publicly in his public discourses.
So very clearly Swami is actually putting off the topic here by saying that, you know, further than this I will explain to you in private, because I think at this point it becomes like Hislop is directly asking Swami, what should I do? You know, what is the sadhana that I should take up, or what is it that I'm doing wrong? I should stop and I should start something else. So at this point, Swami is saying that, see, now it comes to the point of administering a medicine. So what I'm going to give you is going to be specific to you, and I don't want to do it in public. And that's what Swami says, that, you know, it's like a doctor's consultation. It has to be done in private, and that is like respecting your privacy, as well as the doctor is also more free to consult with you. So at this point, Swami says, don't worry, I'll call you all separately and I'll tell you what needs to be told.
In fact, that is how actually the conversation also goes on ahead, where a visitor says, Swami, do I continue teaching with the same meditation? Because it's not always the same people there. Swami answers, you must have the same group. If new people come, you must give them a separate time. Do not mix them with the others. I think all these are pretty self-explanatory. A visitor then says, yesterday there were a number of new people. And then Swami says, again here, I feel it's his omniscience that is showing. Swami is saying, there's not much difference within the group. Even the new people who come to you do not know much. If a child wants to learn ABCs, then you must continue to say ABCD and so on. So, Swami, now this, that part of the interview where the discussion has now broken and each person is asking his individual things, I think, Prem, we can quickly go through before concluding today. So, Swami, another visitor says, Swami, when should I leave? Swami says, whatever your decision is, if you want to leave on 19th, Swami will see you tomorrow. But if you have other plans, it will be adjusted accordingly. Swami is not limited by space. Wherever you are, here in Bombay or wherever he is with you, you have to be happy. That is all that Swami wants. So it depends on your decision. But Swami, I am a person for whom decisions is a great difficulty. And then Swami says, deciding good and bad all the time is a human problem. And so Swami decides for him and says, you can leave on the 11th morning. So in this manner, dear listeners, I think this concluding part of this interview, we will carry it forward to the next fortnight. But again, it is mostly personal queries, but some of the answers are interesting and some of them are relevant for today also. So we will go through that. But at this point in time, I think we'll be concluding this satsang, because the clock in our studio shows that we have barely 1.5 minutes to go before the next segment by Brother Chandu, that is Love to Love, has to begin. So on this note, we offer our gratitude to Swami and our heartfelt thanks to Hislop for having preserved these beautiful conversations. Once again, It is a private conversation, but since many questions asked are questions that bother us also, whichever question that bothers us, we can go along and take Swami's answer for that. Because Swami has apparently intended this for public, because whenever any private thing comes, Swami says, I will take this up separately. So, therefore, our gratitude to Swami as well as our thanks to Hislop. We offer this at his lotus feet. And dear listeners, we hope that you have been enjoying this. anything that you feel, anything that you wish to share, anything that you wish to add, anything at all, you can write to us at listener@radiosai.org. We'll be glad to go through it, and depending on how much it is relevant and how much time we have, we will include it in our next Conversations with Sai segment in the next fortnight. Thank you. Jai Sai Ram.
Hari. ప్రాణ.